From the studios at Boise State Public Radio, I'm Gemma Gaudet. In the foothills north of Boise, just 15 minutes from downtown, sits a piece of Idaho's agricultural past. The historic Schick Ostalasa farmstead was built in the 1860s and is the longest continuously inhabited home in the state of Idaho. The home, the barn, and other buildings sit along Dry Creek, and it's surrounded by lush green trees, a white picket fence. There's even a flock of chickens. The farmstead is on the National Register of Historic Places, thanks to the Dry Creek Historical Society, which works to protect and restore the site, and to also share Idaho's history through the story of the farm. So joining us today to tell us more are Cindy Elliott, the president of the Dry Creek Historical Society, Jay Carmalis, director and historian of Dry Creek, and Frank Eld, the barn whisperer. I want to welcome all of you to the program.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Cindy, I want to start with you. Where exactly is the farmstead? I mean, can you give us an idea of what it looks like?
It is located in northwest Boise. It actually is surrounded by Hidden Springs property, that community. But we actually sit on 2 acres, and it's actually Ada County property. We rent that 2 acres from Ada County every year. And we manage the farmstead for the public and as a museum. It basically is within a split rail fence, and we have the farmhouse, we have the root cellar, we have the woodshed, we have the spring house, the red cookhouse, the granary, the original Schick barn with the horse side and the cow side, and the saddle shop. And then we do have some resident chickens and some resident goats out there that make it feel like a farmstead.
Yeah, sounds like it. So Jay, who built the farmstead, and what do we know about this person?
His name was Philip Schick, but he went by PL to his friends. He had come out west in the years just before the Civil War and did various jobs in the Northwest. And he was actually in the one-year-old town of Lewiston, Idaho Territory, when he heard about the gold rush here at Grimes Creek in 1862. And he signed up with a party of merchants that were bringing a load of supplies down to sell to the miners here. And one night while they were camped near the Boise River, some of his oxen wandered away, and he tracked them over the hills into this valley that he described as being filled with lush, waist-high grass. And he thought that would be a great place to homestead. So he came back the next year with a partner, and they took out the first homestead claim in that valley.
So, Jay, how long did Philip run the farm? And then what happened once he passed away?
He started the farming operation in the valley in 1864, and he continued to live and work there until his death in 1902. After that, his wife and daughter sold the ranch to a financier from Boise who bought it as an investment. And he hired a Basque family by the name of Ostalasa to come and run the ranch for him. And the Ostalasas lived in the house from 1927 until 2005, when the Historical Society took control of the property.
So this was really a working homestead, then a working farm until about, 17 years ago?
Yes, absolutely. Until just after construction of Hidden Springs started in 1997, the plan was for the family to be moved into a new house in Hidden Springs for 10 years, and the farmstead buildings would all be knocked down and replaced with new homes. Mm.
So Jay, was this Bass family, this Ostalasa family, the last family to live in the actual home? Because I mentioned in the opening that the farmstead is the longest continuously lived in home in the state.
Yep. They lived there right up until we took it over to turn it into a museum.
So Cindy, in 2005, as Jay mentioned, the last residents of the home left. This is when the Dry Creek Historical Society stepped in and you became the caretakers of the property. So for folks who aren't familiar, what is the society and how did the organization get started?
Well, there were residents of the Hidden Springs community that were concerned about such an important piece of history and such a unique piece of history getting knocked down. Originally, the developer had it planned for three homes, and basically residents, I was not part of them, but the residents went to the developer and said, "Would you help us save this property?" And the developer said he would. And so between the developer helping fund part of the renovation, builders that were building in that area at that time, residents, a whole bunch of people that cared a whole lot, they were able to save the property, get it to a level where it could actually be open to the public, and then open it. We went on the National Historic Register as well as the State Historic Register, and then we became the Dry Creek Historical Society, which manages the Chick-Ostalasa Farmstead.
So you know what's interesting, Cindy? I have to say that in all of the times I've been out in Hidden Springs, I've seen this farm, and I've always wondered, you know, why in the world is there an old barn sitting in this development? But what now I know, and what a great story.
It really is. It's a bunch of residents that really cared, a bunch of people that really cared, and they saw the importance of a loss of such an important and unique piece of history that could never be recaptured. You know, part of the mission of the Dry Creek Historical Society and the Chick-Ostalasa is education. Mm-hmm. You don't run around and see all these buildings that are actually able to be open to the public and tell a story. They tell a story of people that live there, of lives, of surviving really at what would have been way away from the Boise City proper and having mm-hmm. to make it on their own. As I talked, there were all these different outbuildings. If you couldn't grow it, make it, or eventually trade with or barter with other farmers out there, you didn't have it. And something we stress when we bring out the Boise School District third graders, which were part of their curriculum for third grade, we tell them there was no DoorDash, there was no Walmart, there was no Rite Aid. If you needed medicine for upset stomach, you grew those. We have a medicinal garden out there. You had to grow it. You had to take care of yourself. Wow. And it's a whole different mindset for the kids of today and for how hard people had it back then, but how they made it work and how they were, you know, they just figured it out.
You know, and Cindy, I know that part of your mission, as you mentioned, is education, but it's also the history of Idaho and through the farm. You know, and why in your opinion is this so important to not just give a history lesson, right? But to have something hands-on and tangible versus, you know, reading about this homestead, but there would be, you know, potentially nothing on it if you hadn't come in and saved it.
Exactly. The biggest difference, as you mentioned, is telling somebody something or letting them actually see what it was, feel what it felt like to be there, putting them into the situation. With the Boise School District, part of it is we don't lecture to them. We bring them out and they become historians. They've got a historian's notebook. We tell them, what if you found this, you know, artifact on the site? What would you do? How would you have set up the one-room homesteader as your home when you lived with your mother and father? And we actually take them through, and I think we try to make them feel like they're actually in that time period. We dress in period clothes. So we try to keep them in the spirit of what that was, as opposed to just lecturing to them and telling them this is what was done. We let them figure it out and let them come up with ideas, as we do with the public when they come out. We try to, you know, say, hey, what would you have done?
And before we take a break, restoration of the farmstead is also part of that mission. So, but we're going to talk to Frank Eld a little bit more, but I do want to chat with you for a moment, Frank, before the break, because you're known as the barn whisperer. So talk about the horse barn that sits on the property. I mean, how did you get involved with this restoration, Frank?
Well, I got involved with it through a class that I had that I took it at BSU, and so Dr. Reinhardt's class pairs with a historical society, and when that year they paired with the group at Dry Creek, and so when I went out there, and each student does something for the historical society. And when I went out there, and I'd been to the farmstead, but I'd never been in the barn. And so I said, mm-hmm. Well, can I see the barn? Because that's a lot of my background is in barn restoration and stuff. And I just walked into that barn and I just said, oh, my God, this thing, it's different. There's a story here and I have to find out what this story is. Because it was built differently, you know. It's a post and beam barn, which we see a lot of in Idaho and in the West. But the size of the posts and the beams, they're huge compared to in a typical Idaho barn. Your post, which may be 24 feet long, would be 8 by 8. In this barn, it's 12 feet high and it's 10 by 10. And so I said, there's a story here. And that's how I really got involved with it. I did the research on the barn, found out, you know, more about Schick, and found out he came from New York, upstate New York. Mm. So I did some investigating and research and found out it's typical in upstate New York. And then I confirmed this a couple of years ago when I was back there, that the barns are built much heavier. The beam work is much heavier than what we're accustomed to here. And then I started working on the restoration.
So, Frank, can you tell us why you're known as the Barn Whisperer?
Well, that's a bit tongue-in-cheek. I've done some barn restoration up in Rosebery. We dismantled, moved the barn to the Rosebery Historic Site. And it now serves for the Rosebery Music Festival and weddings all summer. It's very active barn up there. And I also helped establish the barn registry with Preservation Idaho that they run in trying to register all the barns of Idaho, hopefully eventually. And so I've had a lot of interest in barns. And we have a saying that everybody loves a barn. And people do. They're fascinated by barns. I'm very fascinated by barns. And because of my background and past research and whatever, I find that buildings talk to me. You know, if you listen hard enough, they'll tell you most of their story. And so I, of course, look at the construction and study it and say, okay, what is this building telling me? What's it whispering to me and saying, this is how I was built, or this is how I was used, or, you know, this is why I'm so unique. So I let the building do the talking, and that's kind of where this all came up.
I love that. And Cindy and Jay, when the society decided to start restoring the barn, I mean, you had to clean it out. How much stuff was in the barn when you started cleaning it?
Oh, quite a bit, actually. Yeah. Hidden Springs had been using the barn for storage of materials left over from construction and overflow. So, and they had divided the barn up with big sheets of Visqueen. So, the November that Frank and I started to clean the barn out, I think we filled two entire dumpsters just with Visqueen sheets.
Oh my goodness.
And then the real work of cleaning it out could get started. So it had, you know, 50, 60 years of accumulated just sort of junk in there that we had to clean out before we could really see what we had.
So Frank, in the middle of cleaning out this barn, you found a broadaxe, and you knew right away that it didn't belong there. Can you tell us why?
Well, yes, actually, I do a lot of research. My primary research is actually in finished log construction. And this is part of our museum in Rosebery. It's part of my background. And so I have quite a collection of broadaxes and have actually used them. And when I walked in that section of the barn and I saw that broadaxe lying there, I was just taken aback. And so I said to Jay, I said, can I take this? I want to do some research on this axe. And so I did. And my research showed me, number one, that it is a shipwright's broadaxe. What that means is it's a narrower blade. It's not mm-hmm. quite as broad as a broadaxe would be that you would use to hew most timbers like the Finns did. And that indicates, number one, that it came from New England or that okay. area. But also there was a stamp on it, but I couldn't read the whole stamp. It wasn't clear, but I could read the name of the company partially, the name of the company, not the whole company, and Auburn. And that's what I could read. So I launched my research there thinking it was Auburn, New York, because mm-hmm. that's where Schick was mm-hmm. from, and there was manufacturing. Well, it turns out it was from Auburn, New Hampshire. Mm-hmm. And so I actually last summer went to Auburn, New Hampshire, and went to where the factory was, where that axe was made, had been in contact with the museum there, and they gave me the background of this particular axe and said it was made in the 1860s. And so I said, okay, there's no doubt in my mind that this axe was used to build this barn. And Schick brought it from New York with him, because you wouldn't buy that kind of an axe in the West, that kind of a broadaxe. So I was really excited to find that axe, first mm-hmm. of all. And then I confirmed with Robert Ostolassa. I said, what do you know about this axe? He says, it's always been in the barn. You know, he grew up there. So okay. there was no doubt in my mind that Schick had used that axe to hew the beams, and then had set it up on the beams. And there it was until Frank Eld walked in and found it, knew what it was about.
So when you went back to New Hampshire last year, Frank, you also, I mean, you found out, as you mentioned, like who made the axe. But also it's fairly rare, correct? This yes. type of axe. Yes. And for folks who are interested, we're going to put a picture of it up on our website, BoiseStatePublicRadio.org, yes. so you can see it yourself. But what makes it so rare?
Well, they didn't make a lot of them. It was a shorter period of time, and it was the company that made it. I'm drawing a blank right now. I can't think of the name. Is it on your cheat sheet there?
Anyway. It is not, but don't worry about it. It's
okay.
The company didn't make a lot of them.
Pardon?
They didn't make a lot of them, you said.
Yeah, right. And to find it, having come west, it's very rare in the West. I mean, I've never seen one here in the West in all my wow. years of collecting and stuff. And only a few in the East. When I go back there mostly every year, and I hunt the antique stores for broadaxes, because that's my big interest.
Mm-hmm. And so, Frank, I'm curious too, because when you were able to track down all the history surrounding this axe, you were also able to kind of help fill in some important gaps in the history of the barn, but also in regards to Philip Schick. And I mean, I guess one of them being that you now know that he used that broadaxe to build the barn.
Yes. Yes. And the important thing about this is, in looking at that barn, seeing that it was built with the broadaxe, knowing his history, okay, he came from New York, and mm-hmm. that barn is not typical Western barn, as I mentioned earlier, the beams.
Right.
But there's a couple of other things, like it has pigeon holes for birds to come in to the barn, because they would help keep the barn clean of insects. And actually, if they needed some meat, they could go in and shoot a pigeon or a bird, whatever kind of bird might come uh-huh. in. And that was also part of the history. And this barn is the oldest barn in Ada County, and could well be the oldest barn still standing in Idaho, because it was very early on in the homesteading of Idaho. Yeah. So it makes it a very, very significant but unusual barn.
And Frank, why is uncovering this kind of history so important to you?
Because I love history.
There you go.
I get excited. I probably picked that up. As many times as I tell the story, I still get goosebumps because putting the puzzle together, it's the mystery, solving mm-hmm. the mystery, and being able to track it all the way to New Hampshire and where it was made, and actually go to the grave of the man who made it, you know, and in the cemetery, and seeing the area where the mill pond was, and this kind of thing, it just makes history alive. My mantra is, if you want to experience history, you go to a historic site. And that's why the farmstead is so important, because this is where people experience history. If you want to feel history, that's where you experience it.
Well, and, Frank, I want to thank you so much for taking time to chat with us today. Really appreciate it. We have been talking with Cindy Elliott, the president of the Dry Creek Historical Society, Jay Kermalis, director and historian of Dry Creek, and of course, Frank L., the Barn Whisperer, been talking today about the Schick Ostalasa farmstead, which is tucked away in the Boise foothills. We will, of course, put pictures of the farmstead on our website, boisestatepublicradio.org. And remember, tomorrow night at Who Matters, we'll look at all of the news that made headlines this week in our Friday Reporter Roundtable. Our senior producer is Samantha Wright. Our assistant producer is Hannah Gardowski. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you back here tomorrow.